This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio.
WGN Chicago.
720 WGN.
Coming up on 610 in the morning, and Nick DiGiulio will join us in a little bit, tell you what movies are coming out this coming weekend. After 7 this morning, Forrest Claypool, Eric Edelstein, Pat Brady, as always. Governor Sununu, 640, I forgot to mention this, Rick Pearson will be on. Pearson will be talking about the developments yesterday in local politics.
The Iowa recount request
yeah.
As well.
Yeah, well, here's...
Oh, that's great.
Here's listen to the 8 o'clock hour. You got your Dean Richards, You got your Coach Q, you got your Bob Baffert, the legendary trainer. And did you know Orion was a jockey?
I don't think he was a jockey. Yeah, he's way too tall.
True. And after 9, a little interesting political experiment, if you will. Eric Holcomb is running for the Senate in Indiana. Eric Holcomb is also a guy that helped build the political career of Mitch Daniels, the former governor of Indiana, who was thought to run for president in 2012 and probably would have been the favorite early on before he decided to step aside and go and run Purdue. And he is now, as I said, running for Senate himself, but he knows the national political game. And as he carves out a career for himself now, as opposed to building up somebody else, it's going to be interesting to talk to him about his own race, about the state of Indiana. You know, they do, I don't know if you know this. They had this in Iowa. They have this in Indiana as well. They have a budget.
Yes, they do. Something we do not have here.
I wonder if Michigan and Wisconsin have budgets. They probably do.
I don't know about Michigan. No,
it's
Wisconsin,
only states
sure.
which begin with the letter I. Oh, wait.
Oh, wait.
The exception to every
so
rule.
Much.
A couple other things going on. There will be no recount in Iowa. Donald Trump is insisting on a recount because he said that Ted Cruz stole the Iowa caucuses. Here's how the alleged theft took place. Ben Carson made an announcement that after the caucuses, he was going to go home and get, quote, a clean set of clothes. And a bunch of people gave him a hard time about it. Look, he was going home to hang out for a little bit. You know, repack his laundry and come back out on the road. It's not a story.
Who cares?
It's not even remotely a story.
No, I agree.
Ted Cruz's campaign staff took that announcement from CNN that he was taking a break from the campaign and then ran with it and told their precinct captains around the state of Iowa that Ben Carson had quit and they should all vote for him. Now, why is that important? Well, it's important because Ben Carson and Ted Cruz split the far-right conservative vote. Voter fraud, there's no way to quantify it based on that anecdote, but maybe, certainly a slimy move.
Well, a little, I would even say maybe bordering on misconduct.
Yeah, but the state of Iowa shown no interest in taking it any further. The attorney general certified the election results. The Iowa caucuses are over. It's just more fodder for Trump. Trump yesterday got right back to the Don Trump we love. Don Trump, big mouth.
They love me. They love me.
Got right back on it yesterday. He's throwing rights. He's throwing lefts. He is causing all sorts of noise in Iowa, and we'll see if any of it sticks by the time next weekend comes around.
You know who this is great for, though? Rubio. Because Rubio took this opportunity to say, you know, as all this little infighting was going on between Trump and Cruz and their bromance is over, now Rubio's saying, oh, you know what? I'm a unifier.
I wonder if Rubio got the Rick Santorum. Oh, he did. He got the Rick Santorum coveted endorsement, and Santorum, I think, had 9 votes in Iowa. So we'll see if that makes too much of a difference. But he's already, getting Republicans together. I don't know. There's something about Rubio. I just can't. You make a 30-minute speech for finishing third. I just settle down. Take a breath, Timmy. It's my name for everyone that looks like they're 12. Timmy.
I think he's just excited. There's something likable about Rubio.
Okay.
There is.
Well, keep trying to convince me. I got to vote for somebody, and I don't know who it is yet. On a Democrat side, Hillary and Bernie. Those are the two old people in the Muppets. Hillary and Bernie had their town hall last night. Anderson Cooper asked Hillary Clinton, which I think was an unfair question. I like Anderson Cooper. But Hillary Clinton apparently got $675,000 for one speaking engagement. Pardon me. I'm not used to actually having water to drink here, so my throat's actually trying to get back. But Hillary Clinton got $675,000, and Anderson Cooper said, did you have to get paid $675,000? I don't even know what that question means.
I don't either. How would you answer that? No, I don't deserve that?
I would say what Hillary Clinton said, which was, that was what was offered. I don't know that that's what was up. I mean, she didn't handle it confidently,
no.
But it was a weird question. On the flip side of that, I don't know how you can continue to stumble over your vote on the Iraq War. It's 10, 11 years ago now, mm-hmm. 12 years ago. But she continues to take too long to answer that question. So Bernie Sanders, meanwhile, is continuing to promise the moon, but Hillary and Bernie are going at each other.
And also, to the $675,000, Hillary hadn't at that point declared her candidacy for president. So it's not like she declared the candidacy, took
right.
the $675,000.
She was a private citizen.
Right.
She continues to have trouble, too, explaining the support of big banks on Wall Street. And Bernie Sanders continues to yell, that's not what a progressive does. That's not a progressive. Look, you keep screaming about being a socialist and a progressive, you're going to get 12 votes. I'm sorry, the kids will vote, too. So that's your little roundup of the politics from last night. In a moment, the gift that keeps on giving, Andrea's new best friend gave her a gift last night, and she actually passed it on to me. You didn't re-gift it because you have one of your own.
No,
well.
He gave me a couple to give to all you guys.
Right. So we'll get to that in a second. We'll tell you who he is. So Andrea is really good at going out and meeting people. You like people. I think that's fair to say.
I do. I like interviewing new people, meeting new people.
And next week when you're in New Hampshire, you're going to run around, chase candidates down,
mm-hmm.
things like that.
Yeah.
So you have to like people to do that. And you're minding your own business, working out in your building. And there in the gym, this is a while ago now.
Yeah, it was Mr. T.
You saw Mr. T.
Get up, fool.
And Mr. T was, on a treadmill or something?
He lifts weights. He does do the treadmill, but then he lifts weights.
Really, you can't tell.
Because he goes, ooh.
Does he make a lot of noise when he works out?
He goes, pain.
First name, Mr. Middle name, period. Last name, T. First name, Mr. Middle name, period. Last name, T.
So, Mr. T, working out in your building, you've run into him several times. He originally thought your name was Angela.
He did. He called me Angela for a while. He's such a
nice... How you doing, Angela?
Angela, and I didn't correct him. He's such a nice guy. I mean, he really is kind of a gentle giant.
You ran into him yesterday, and he gave you a whole bunch of these. Put Mr. T in your pocket.
Don't make me mad.
Isn't that great?
It's a keychain with the Mr. T sayings on it. So,
quit your jibber jabber.
Oh, I'm sorry,
that's the one Kevin likes.
I pity the fool.
Andre,
I pity the fool.
You should have given him the puck to put in his pants.
maybe.
Yeah,
that's possible.
Try.
Maybe.
Still possible.
He said he was going to come on with us hopefully either next week or the week after. Kevin's going to give him a call.
He's actually much busier than you thought he would be.
Yeah, he is. No, seriously, the A-team, he told me this the last time I saw him. The A-team is still very big in Europe, so he travels a lot to promote the show. He goes to Europe and Asia. Like what would be, Comic-Con or, conventions and things like that. Old TV conventions.
AsiaCon.
Something like that,
don't
yeah.
Give me no back talk, sucker.
But he's starting a new program. This is going to be really cool. We'll have him tell us about it, like kind of an after-school program for kids.
To help kids out.
Yeah.
63 years old. Looks pretty good.
He looks really good.
Does he still have the mohawk?
He does. It's not as poofy as it once was.
Because it's falling out?
No, it's just, it's cut closer.
I'm thinking about
kind
growing
of the close
my
shave.
Tell me what you think of this, and Mary, what do you think of it as well? I'm thinking about growing mine out and having two side hawks.
Oh,
yeah, just one side hawk in either side of my head. What do you think?
How many years do you have?
I'm planning on being around for a while. We'll
come
back. We'll come back with Nick DiGilio next on 720 WGN.
We'll be searching high and low on the deck and down below. But it's a crying shame. Oh, we'll see a lot of fish, but we'll never clock a dish. We ain't gonna see a dame.
Wacky new movie from the Coen brothers, Hail Caesar. That's a little Toonski from it, and Josh Brolin was on Conan last night. Josh Brolin, Nick DiGilio, joins us now. Nick, Josh Brolin's very funny.
Oh, he's hysterical.
Yeah,
he's absolutely hilarious, and it's kind of frightening how he continues to look exactly like his dad.
Yes, he's growing into that well, and it's going to make it awkward sometime at Thanksgiving because Barbara may confuse the two. Start singing Evergreen to him instead of to his dad. It's going to be weird. Hey, speaking of celebrities, I haven't talked to you since your Groundhog's Day movie extravaganza because, I wasn't with you.
And, yeah, you were out in Iowa eating loose meat sandwiches.
And at the Groundhog's Day extravaganza, did the great Stephen Tobolowsky make an appearance?
Yes, he did, and it was phenomenal. We had him on via Skype And his whole giant head took up the screen in the theater. And
I respect that.
We had a live Q&A with the audience, and the audience was thrilled, and it was great. He was hysterical. He told great stories about Groundhog Day. Somebody asked the question. They were like, "Hey, I read somewhere that Bill Murray, his character spends 10 years in Punxsutawney, stuck in that day. What would you do if you had 10 years to spend in one day? What would you do with your life?" And he said, he corrected this person by saying, "I talked to Harold Ramis, and Harold Ramis was interested in Buddhism. So his answer was that Phil, the character that Bill Murray plays, spends 10,000 years in Punxsutawney because it takes according to Buddhism, it takes 10,000 years to live your life over and over again until you perfect it. So according to Harold Ramis, next time you watch Groundhog Day, just think he's there for 10,000 years.
It's going to make you hate Sonny and Cher at some point, isn't it?
Yeah, he also said, we were calling him up. You know, I was like, "Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we're gonna get Stephen Tobolowsky on the line here." So we had a laptop on the stage in front of the screen, and it was projected onto the big screen. And all of a sudden, it said, "Dialing Stephen Tobolowsky." When you're Skyping, you have to dial in. And it kept ringing and ringing and ringing, and he didn't answer right away. And so finally, we get a hold of him, we get him on, and I'm like, "Well, Stephen, we were worried. I was worried that you were going to blow me off. What's going on?" He goes, "Well, I'll be honest with you, Nick. I was putting on a pair of pants."
and Tobolowsky looks like a guy who ought to have pants on.
Well, and then he said, "Yeah, but the funny part was like the camera that he had on his computer, it was only showing him like from the shoulders up or a little bit below his shoulders."
Right.
And I was like, "Well, we don't see that." And he goes, "Well, Nick, I know you, and you're going to want me to stand up at some point." And I was like, "Yeah, you're right."
So you do that with all your guests, the pants test?
Well, yeah, I do. When I said to him, I was like, "Well, you know how much I love your footwear, Stephen." So, you know.
Yeah,
but, he was great. He was great. And the guy's been in a million movies, and he answered questions about Memento. He answered questions about Deadwood, about Thelma and Louise. And it was great. It really was great. Okay. And the biggest turnout we've ever had. So.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Very cool. All right, let me get back to the top of the segment with Hail Caesar. What do you hear?
Yeah. I hear it's great. I hear it's really, really great. And I'm looking forward to it. I run hot and cold on when the Coen brothers work with Clooney. I'm one of the few people on this planet that thinks "Oh Brother, We're Out" that was one of the worst movies ever made.
I wasn't a fan. And, I mean, I didn't hate it, but I wasn't a fan.
And I didn't like Intolerable Cruelty.
Watch this, though. Hey, Ross, what did you think of "Oh Brother, Where Art Thou"? Yeah, there you go. It sucked.
I didn't hear him. What did he say?
What'd you say, son? There you go. It sucked.
Oh, okay, good. I'm not alone. Okay, I thought I was alone on that one. Oh, okay. But I'm looking forward to it. It takes place in the 50s, and he's their biggest star at Capitol Pictures. And here's what I love so far already, Steve. You know, my favorite Coen Brothers movie is Barton Fink. I think it's their best movie ever. And I love the fact that in this movie, which takes place in the 50s, and Barton Fink took place in the 40s, that it's the same studio that Barton Fink worked for. It's Capitol Pictures.
Oh, that's great. They got throwbacks.
Yeah, I hope so. But in my world, Michael Lerner's character from Barton Fink got fired. That's what.
That's all you need to get you kicked off on the right foot for Hail Caesar.
I'm looking forward to it. Yeah, I hope it's really good. The Coen brothers have a pretty great track record. You know, so I'm looking forward to that. And it's got a great cast. You know, Scarlett Johansson's in it, Jonah Hill's in it. You mentioned Josh Brolin. I think it's going to be a winner. And the other one that opens
Josh Brolin, by the way, told a very funny story on Conan last night. He said, for every guy who just gets tired of how good-looking George Clooney is, and for every woman who thought, "Well, why not marry me?" For all of you who it never worked out for, I went to the Coen brothers and I said, "You got a scene in the movie where I can slap him?" And that's and that's the trailer you see where he's slapping the hell out of Clooney.
Yeah.
So he enjoyed slapping him. All right, tell me the other movies.
The other one that's coming up, there's only one other big one. There's a couple of smaller ones, but the other one is Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, which I'm actually really looking forward to because the book was great. It's basically Pride and Prejudice, the Jane Austen novel, but with zombies. And instead of women who have to, you know, like in the Jane Austen books, a woman isn't a woman until she finds a man and marries him. That's essentially what those books are about. In this movie, they just kick zombie ass and they don't care about men.
Is this from the people that brought us Abraham Lincoln zombie killer or vampire killer or whatever that was?
It's not. And I'm grateful for that because Abraham Lincoln vampire killer is a great book and a terrible movie. And the reason why, I mean, I remember when I heard that they were making a movie out of Abraham Lincoln vampire killer, vampire hunter. And I said, no, that's a mistake because the book is written as though it were a real textbook, like a reference book. And it's a satire, a parody of a textbook. You can't make a movie narrative
for that. No,
no, they screwed it up. Bad idea.
But I do think it's gutsy to do a book called Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter and assume the people that would want to read it could read. I think that's a gutsy book. The choice.
Here's the thing. I got the audio book. So.
Oh, yeah, of course. The choice is out as well. And Regression, Ethan Hawke was on yesterday talking about Regression. He's a great guest. We like Ethan. So we're pulling for him, but we don't know if the movie's any good. But we do want you to see Hail Caesar and listen
Hail
to Nick.
Hail Caesar. Yeah, and then come to my – and I want all you guys to come because my next film club is on a Saturday. And it's Scarface, Al Pacino Scarface. We're going to count the F-bombs. We're going to have a great time. It's a Saturday night, so I expect all you guys to come out. They're going to have mojitos. And Cuban sandwiches. It's Saturday, February 20th.
I'm sorry, Mr. T got in the middle there.
And it's BYOC, bring your own cocaine.
Bring your own cocaine. Chug a mojito every time they say that they drop the F-bomb.
That'd be a big night for mojitos.
You'll be dead in 5 minutes.
No doubt about it. Nick DiGilio, tonight, 2 a.m., back after this on 720 WGN. Yesterday, right around this time, I broke the news that the Washington Post had taken a real hard look at brand new science and that something called resting bitch face was a condition that could hold down women and keep women from being able to progress because there's a double standard. A quote, resting bitch face, that's the condition. I'm not cursing on the radio. That's what it's called. That resting bitch face, that serious pout, if you will, appears to be a determined look on men, but on women, well, you look like you're resting.
Well, it's, yeah, negative, kind of a negative connotation.
Negative connotation.
Yeah.
So, Ross Cochran's here. Ross, how are you?
I'm happy to be here.
Okay, good. So you took pictures of all of us on the staff.
Yes.
And you posted them on Facebook and Twitter.
Yes.
And for the people that, you know, have a certain length commute and weren't around later in the show, we announced the winner yesterday, winner/loser. Who actually had the number one vote-getting resting bitch face on the staff?
Mary Vandeveld.
Mary.
Yay, Mary.
Congratulations.
Are we congrats, Mayor.
Still nice talking job, about Mayor. This?
Not close. Not close?
No. It was not close at all.
And her husband, Steve, called in weeping?
Yes. Yes.
He's like, no kidding.
He voted for Mary twice.
Oh, what?
Was there a clear second, or everybody else just got a couple of votes?
I mean, not to play into the study, but Andrea made a late surge to kind of get ahead of Dave to be the late second.
Really?
But like, as with everything else on this show, Andrea and Dave were close enough where they could fight about it.
Ah, perfect.
Oh, man. Can I just change the name of this syndrome?
What would you like
it's
to call
like
it?
The mom face. Like, when you're looking at your kid saying, you know something, you better do this or else. It's kind of like the mom face. Don't
the
you
mom
think?
Face.
Yeah.
Yeah, the mom face. The look.
The look, yes.
You just got
now, it used
the
to be a,
look.
It used to be a look, and now it's a syndrome.
Yeah, but, I mean, that look a lot.
Seriously?
Because playing into that, mine, all anyone said on mine was, oh, this just looks like you haven't slept because of Abigail.
Right.
And for Dave's, it was focused, determined. For Kevin's, it was baby-faced.
Didn't I get some haters?
You got a few, but everyone basically just said either the Genucel is working great or the Genucel is working terrible.
It depends on the lighting.
Yeah.
But congratulations, Mary. You have successfully won the competition.
And I knew I could win this one.
I say won in very, very light terms because... we're going to get you into the study. We're going to get some experimental drugs of some sort, I'm sure. I don't know what they'll do for you.
What was their cure?
And we'll see if we can. We don't want you to change, Mary. We just don't want you held down by your resting bitch face.
Thanks.
Maybe we should just call it RBF.
It is better.
It sounds a little nicer.
And what's my prize for this syndrome, Dan?
A $25 Lumonati's gift card.
Yes.
Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
And I'll give you some of the Genucel I need to use more of, apparently.
Apparently I need it, too. So. I got a lot of comments about, Mary looks really tired.
Well, we're all tired.
Yeah, of course we are. We've been doing this shift for how long?
It's 6:45. We'll come back with our friend Rick Pearson in a moment, try to explain what's going on with the city schools. And Rick will fix a problem before 7 on 720 WGN.
And I think I'll do some traffic now.
Yeah. Sorry, I should, probably should have given you an introduction, but you gave me the look and I was scared.
That's okay. I also wanted to thank all of my listeners who voted for me.
Bankruptcy, along with a proper negotiation process with a leader who will stand up and fight for taxpayers, will result in both the schools staying open, no layoffs. I don't think that we should have to lay off a teacher if this is structured properly. We can protect our children and their education and still protect taxpayers.
Once again, in the state of Illinois, in the city of Chicago, it's all about the kids. It's not about the grown-ups. It's all about the kids. Rick Pearson here, finest political writer in America. Chicago Tribune, ChicagoTribune.com, host of the Sunday Spin. Who's a guest this week?
I've got David Yepsen from the Paul Simon Institute.
Big help to us out in Iowa.
Guy knows everything about the Iowa caucuses. And former Iowa Republican Chairman Matt Strawn as we recap Iowa and look ahead to New Hampshire.
Well, they were both very good to us in our couple of shows up there. All right, let's go over some basics here. Didn't we just have a strike? And why are the teachers in the all wound up in the unions all wound up in this again?
Well, we had a strike in 2012,
right?
But now new contract talks.
So it was a 3-year deal that was that's expiring.
It's expiring, and you know, one of the
4 years or whatever.
One of the interesting things in this is that you did have the Chicago Public Schools, Forrest Claypool, and Karen Lewis, Chicago Teachers Union, had a tentative deal, and the alleged deal was taken back to the House of Delegates by the Teachers Union and summarily rejected. This raises the question about, you know, a lot of people are critical of Karen Lewis, think she's kind of too far out there, but he or she was negotiating a deal, and that was rejected by her membership. So what legitimacy is there with Karen Lewis and her members as far as, you know, moving forward the union? This is a very concerning issue, particularly when you look at the financial issues that are facing the Chicago Public Schools.
All right, we fast forward to yesterday, and there was a big press opportunity and a big headline-grabbing move to close down a $750,000 account at Bank of America. What was that money for?
Well, that's investment money by the teachers' union. They're complaining about a lot of the financial moves that CPS has taken through the administration have resulted in overtly expensive loan deals that make the banks profit at the expense of money that should be going into the school system. So, yeah, it was show, you know, very much a prop kind of thing. But the bottom line remains, there is no deal here for the teachers and CPS. They are talking about filing an unfair labor practice because CPS plans to impose things like in 30 days that the portion of teacher pensions that public schools pick up for them in lieu of a pay increase, that's going away.
So wouldn't it behoove the union to make a deal?
Well,
because you don't have to get to that deadline. You don't have, of course, we will, but you don't have to get to that point. So what is the city or I know, and I'll ask Forrest Claypool this when he's on in a few minutes. But what does the city say they're offering, and what do the teachers want?
Well, one of the things that had been on the table was, yes, this pension pickup is going to go away, that teachers would contribute more towards their pensions than they do now. Mm-hmm. But there would not ostensibly be a pay raise for the duration of the contract, or very few teachers would get a raise. In essence, they would be taking a pay cut because they're giving more money into their pensions. I mean, pay now, pay later kind of thing. But then also part of the provisions of this was that there would be teacher layoffs. And those kind of factors were the two major factors in the rejection of this proposed contract.
Haven't the teachers kind of backed themselves into a corner now, though, Rick, because they said no to what they were offering? Now Rauner's saying, well, you got to file for bankruptcy if you want to get anything from the state. They're not going to give them any money.
Well, Rauner's, quite frankly, when it comes to this, Rauner is playing an outside game right now because he talked about, well, you know, I'm going to have my people look at financial oversight of the schools. I'm looking at picking an interim superintendent so when the state takes over. None of that can happen without legislation. Legislation's not going anywhere.
Because you need Democrats to pass it, and they're
exactly,
not going to do that.
And they're not going to do that. So, I mean, one of the interesting things is yesterday CPS sold $725 million in bonds. Huge penalty on the interest rate because they're in junk bond status.
8.5%, 8.75%.
I think 8.75%. City Hall's response to that is they're saying that the CPS got charged the Rauner penalty. And here's more of the rhetoric, but alleging that Rauner, with talking about bankruptcy, talking about those kinds of issues, insolvency, basically created a penalty that bond buyers found to jack up the interest rate.
And they have to
pay
that
penalty.
That's
not how it works. That's not how penalties work. Penalties work because you've accrued bad credit status.
Well, and indeed, that was the whole issue, is that they are in junk bond status.
Right, in junk bond status.
You pay Rauner, the penalty and the interest.
Yeah, Rauner picked up on junk bond status. That was left for him by the 3 or 4 or 5 or 7 previous governors.
Oh, well,
this
isn't the state's junk bond status. This is Chicago Public Schools.
Right, but my point is you can hit Rauner with a lot of things very legitimately. This ain't one of them.
No, but certainly there's a question about when he has spoken in the past very stridently towards the issue of the Chicago Public Schools and bankruptcy. It's at times when CPS is looking to go sell bonds.
But isn't this where we've run into and banged our head against the walls before? I saw the poll in the Tribune this morning that says 3/4 of the people are backing the teachers. Only 25% see the city side of this argument. Those people that were polled are in large part not basing that on facts, in my opinion. They're basing it on the fact that they really don't like ROM. And I suppose there's not a way you can quantify that.
Well, actually, in our previous polling, when we've asked, and every time we've done a city poll, we've all asked this question.
And what's the trend?
And this is the absolute trend. Even when ROM does have a good job approval ratings, it's still people side with the teachers.
There's this opinion that the city's out to get the teachers.
Well, and I don't know if it's that as much as. One, this is still very much a union-rooted city. And so there is, we ask whether you support, do you side with ROM, do you side with Chicago Teachers Union? And I think one is, there's still a lot of union roots in this city. Two, there's still great affection by people for teachers.
Same here.
And then you couple that, yes, the ROM factor, you know. Here's the teacher, apple on the desk, and then there's Rom, who's got the knife ready to cut the apple. You know,
right.
But isn't there a similarity between the state pension mess and the city schools mess in that it all comes down to the same thing? Regardless of how we got here, we got this much money, and we got this much to pay in bills. Something's got to give. So, I don't want a single teacher to take a pay cut. But something's got to give.
Right. Well, but one difference, and truly part of the problems, the financial problems of the Chicago Public Schools, are with the pensions. I mean, back in 95, when then-Mayor Daley was given control of the school, something he wanted, the CPS also got pension holidays where they didn't have to pay money into the teacher pension fund.
I don't see why paying a little more into your pension is a bad thing.
And will they grandfather the folks, the older teachers, where theirs wouldn't be affected, but it would be a new teacher thing? Or is that just still, it'd be across the board?
It'd be across the board.
Okay. Look, pay me now or pay me later is a phrase that you said. We've said it here many times. I don't know in what world any of the unions are living where they think suddenly Illinois is going to become solvent by not getting anywhere with any of this stuff. Are you legally entitled to your contract? You absolutely are. But if your contract can't be paid, it can't be paid. So save as much money as you possibly can and strike a deal before that pile of money gets even smaller.
Well, and as we've said before, and particularly about pensions, because of the way they're constitutionally protected, there's no give. We have to pay. That's the way the law is. You can change the Constitution. You can do whatever you want. But there is no give by the unions on pensions.
Right. But my point,
look at the fact, though, that those pensions are eating up 25%.
Close to
25% of the state budget.
If we stay with the broken rules that have gotten us into this position, we will be Detroit. We'll be Detroit in about 15 minutes. So unless we get people together to go, we got a huge problem here. We got to work together to solve it. That's not Steve's idealistic world. That's just facts. Unless people get together to do that, we are headed right where Detroit was, by the way, because Detroit's coming back. So we'll be the new Detroit in downtown Chicago, in the city, in all the surrounding suburban districts. Everybody thinks everything's going great. It's coming to your door, people. I say it every day. It's coming to your door because those that you elected can't figure out a way to get around it. And we got a line of lawyers who can't wait to take it back to court. You talk about a self-fulfilling prophecy. We're too stupid to not see it.
And the trouble is, cutting a deal of any kind in an election year is virtually impossible.
Right, which again, how far up your butt do you have to have your heads to not see the outcome here? Can you hear the echo, Springfield? That's you. Coming up on 7 o'clock, more to come on 720 WGN. In the morning, Forrest Claypool is in charge of Chicago schools, and he has a giant bottle of Advil on his desk, which he refills every 20 minutes. Good morning, Mr. Claypool. How are you?
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
I'm all right. I don't envy your position, and I certainly pull for teachers as well. And so let's start there. Are you in the city trying to knock all teachers out of work and put them into one giant home where they'll have to support each other?
Well, I'll tell you what, we all know that the teachers and our principals are the key to success. In fact, we got to really laud our teachers because in the last 4 years, we've seen enormous progress for our kids. I mean, despite all these financial problems, Chicago Public School students are doing better than ever. Record graduation rates, test scores, going to college more than ever. A lot of academic growth that exceeds state and federal growth. So a lot good going on with them, and obviously we want to keep our teachers teaching, and we want to support them and give them the resources that they need, which is why we have to get through this crisis. We have to balance the budget, and everybody's got to be part of that solution.
What's the union asking for that the city is unable to deliver? Is it strictly cash, or is it cash and prizes?
Well, you know, the big bargaining committee that rejected the tentative agreement we had with CTU leadership really didn't critique the contract as the specifics. Really what they talked about was that they didn't trust our ability to carry through on the promises in the contract. And they said it was a question of trust. So we hear that, and we're anxious to get back to the bargaining table with them to try to address those issues. If there's language or guarantees or other things we can do to strengthen the things they like in the contract but simply don't believe that can be delivered, then we want to address that.
But just help me out with that for a second. If the union agreed to a tentative deal and there's a trust issue on the union side, isn't it the union leadership's job to convince the rank and file that the trust issue can be, you know, put aside because they agreed to the deal? What am I missing there?
Yeah, it's confusing. The CTU has a very democratic process. They have a multi-tiered step of approvals that goes from the leadership to a 40-member big bargaining committee to the House of Delegates to the rank and file. So we were at stage two, and that's where it got hung up. So I'm not really an expert in internal CTU politics, but it's more difficult than in working out deals with other unions, that's for sure.
Forrest, what's your response to Karen Lewis's response where she's calling the proposed cuts an act of war?
Well, we're not at war. We're at the bargaining table, and we will be again on Friday. And the fact that we spent 18 consecutive days from early to late working out a deal, I think, is a sign that we can get there, and we can get a deal, and we're both committed to a deal. You know, the steps that we took earlier this week were not steps that we took lightly. No one wants to cut staff in schools, and these are things that, unfortunately, when you have a $1.1 billion budget deficit, a $500,000 hole in our budget this year alone, that crisis threatens our schools. It means that we can't keep our doors open if this continues much longer. We simply ran out of time to start whacking that deficit down so that we're not borrowing millions of dollars every day that ultimately will be at the expense of our kids in our classrooms and threaten our ability to keep the school doors open.
Is it true that most of the cuts fall on special ed education, and if so, why does it fall that way?
Not at all, and not one cent.
So, well, you've seen the story, you know, so where does that
what
come
story?
From?
What story?
Just a story that special education is getting whacked harder than other parts of the schools.
Oh, that's completely false. We're spending more money on special education this year than we did last year, and none of these cuts will be in special education.
So that's a bad leak or faulty reporting in some form?
Correct.
Okay. Well, I appreciate the clarification on that. So the cuts that you had to take, because, again, there's this much money and there's this much in bills, where do they fall? General population for educators or administrators?
We obviously rely on our principals to make those decisions. They know their schools. They know how they have to deliver the curriculum to their children, and they will obviously make the cuts in a way that mitigates impact on the classroom. And obviously, we've said that we're going to do everything we can working with our principals to avoid teacher layoffs, obviously. So obviously, I think some of the support and administrative staff in the schools will more likely be targeted, but each principal will have to make those decisions.
Is there a formula that is far? Listen, I'm not expecting you to explain it here, but how do you tell the principals how much they need to cut per school? It depends on the size of the school, that type of thing.
Well, it's really a proportional amount of the budgets. We will be giving them their numbers on Monday, but what we're talking about is $100 million cut. So we're really talking about roughly 5%. But each school and each principal will make those decisions, and we have support and other. Things we can do to help mitigate in addition to make sure we get through the school year in a way that doesn't impact our kids.
Come with me into the land of make-believe for a second, and let's pretend that the state's going to get a budget together in the next 30 days. What difference would that make for you?
Well, it'd make a huge difference if the issue of education funding is addressed. As we've begun to point out, and people are just now beginning to realize, we have an education system in Illinois that is separate but unequal, where kids in the rest of the state get a certain amount of money for their educations, and kids in Chicago, 86% of whom are low income, receive far less. We receive 27% less education funding in Chicago than schools in the rest of the state receive on average, and that is a system that by any standard cannot withstand scrutiny. So you'll be hearing a lot more about that in the coming weeks and months, and I believe ultimately that the state will have to change that system one way or the other, and just equality. I mean, our kids are 20% of state enrollment, our taxpayers pay 20% of state income taxes, but we receive less than 15% of state education funding, and just equality alone would be $500 million a year extra to Chicago Public Schools.
Forrest, how soon could we see layoffs, teacher layoffs?
That's the process that's beginning, and the teachers will get their numbers on Monday. We're hopeful that there won't be teacher layoffs. We're going to do everything we can to prevent that. But obviously there will be layoffs, and it's just a question of how fast the principals can put their budgets together.
Forrest, it's Rick Pearson from the Tribune.
Hi, Rick.
I know we've talked about this whole issue of funding schools by zip code and the nature of that, but we've talked about that for decades and decades. And yes, while people are talking about the need to do a new school aid formula, even the governor, when you look at the dysfunction that exists in Springfield, you had the governor the other day say he wants a new school aid formula, but he doesn't want any schools to lose money they already have. That's going to take a massive influx of cash. Given the political realities and how we've had this debate over decades, how confident are you that any changes are actually going to happen?
Well, even the governor has said there has to be more revenue. The one thing that the leaders down there and the governor agree on is that ultimately there has to be more revenue, and I think most people want that to go to education. But as you know, Rick, as you're covering it every day in this marathon down there, the governor has another agenda which he wants addressed before we get to that. And, that's fine if he wants to hold up the state budget that, but he shouldn't hold the children of Chicago hostage to that political agenda.
Do you think there needs to be more equitable funding around the state for all schools? I mean, one of the things that's come out recently is we think of the poorest schools being strictly in the city of Chicago, but there's districts in suburban areas that are extremely underfunded and in rough shape as well.
Well, there's no question. I think, first of all, I think we recognize that Illinois does so little compared to other states for education, almost dead last in the percentage of education funding that comes from the state. When it comes to recognizing the higher cost of educating kids in poverty, we're 50th out of 50. So there's a lot that's needed. And, yeah, there are all kinds of schools across the state that would benefit by a changed formula, and there's a lot of talk and momentum around that. I mean, there are downstate communities, suburban communities, city of Chicago that would all benefit not just from higher education funding, but a system that takes into account the different variances between districts that create massive inequalities.
It's Forrest Claypool, head of the CPS schools. Good luck in the negotiations. I hope you're back at the table soon, and I don't mean to have lunch.
It'll be Friday, so thank you. Appreciate it.
All right. Thanks for being on. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Forrest Claypool, the head of the CPS schools, will come back and get traffic here. Pat Brady is from Next Generation Strategies and joins us now on the phone. Good morning, Mr. Brady.
Morning.
How are you?
Living the dream, buddy.
All right, then. Eric Adelstein, what is your company?
Our company is AL Media Strategy.
At Adel64, at Pat_Brady. Rick Pearson is here as well from the Chicago Tribune. I assume you guys just heard the comments of Forrest Claypool. Either one of you, thoughts on the school situation? All right, your time's up. Rick, your thoughts? No, either one of you.
Those crickets sound like the bond buyers.
Say again?
No. I say that Forrest is doing a great job, and I think, you know, look, it's a negotiation. You're going to have a lot of public posturing, a lot of stuff said in the press, and then you get serious at the bargaining table. I think, given how little help they're getting from Springfield, how dire the financial situation is, I think it's impressive they've come this far, and I think there's a better chance than not that they will reach an agreement sooner than later.
Yeah, I agree, and I hope so. But the bottom line is they're going to try to ask for $500 million from Springfield. And before they do that, things need to change. We can't just keep having these crisis moments and asking the taxpayers for more money. And I applaud the governor for actually getting involved and saying, for the first time, the taxpayers are going to have a voice in this.
Is there going to be someone whose butt the monkeys are going to have to fly out of before this deal's done, Rick Pearson?
Well, you know, the fact that maybe there is more pressure on cutting a deal, but we thought we had a deal. And again, that goes back to, I think, what should be very concerning to folks is the fact that, you know, at a bargaining table, you assume when you've struck a tentative deal that it's going to get ratified by the union membership.
Well, and the process of ratifying the agreement, the four stages of no... I mean, I don't know how they've gotten anything done.
Well, as Forrest said diplomatically, it's a very democratic process.
Why is everything in Illinois like a Rubik's Cube? Why isn't something an up or down vote and it actually sticks?
Well, but truly, for a union contract, the union members are entitled to have their say.
Well, no, I understand that, but I've never heard of a union situation, and maybe there's a lot of them. And again, keep in mind I'm a union member, but I've never heard of a union situation where four different groups have to say, uh-huh, before you actually get the go-ahead, after an agreement's been reached.
And, yes, is that cumbersome? Yes. Is there bureaucracy? It is. Yes. That's also part of how government works or doesn't work.
A concern about the kids. I'm also concerned about teachers because, obviously, the vast majority of teachers aren't involved in the negotiation. They trust people to negotiate for them. And I don't know, fellas, I just don't think the teachers are getting a fair shake out of this either.
Well, there's no question, and it doesn't help when, as Karen Lewis said, the rantings of a madman and man in Springfield and the governor says things that make no sense and tries to inject himself into the process. You know, the guy Governor Rauner has spent the last few years really tearing down teachers, and I think that demoralizes the profession and doesn't help you get to yes. So I agree with you, Steve. I think it's the school kids and the teachers, frankly, who are the ones that drive this stuff. You know, the other part on the money, I've said this before, and I think Forrest has done this. The Chicago public schools or Chicago public taxpayers give more money to Springfield than the kids get back in money. So this notion somehow that Chicago, you know, bleeds money from Springfield, it's just not the case.
Well, the reality is they're going to go back to taxpayers now and ask for another $500 million because of their ineptitude in managing the finances of Chicago public schools and people that live in the suburbs, who the Democrats like to stick it to. You know, we're all going to get hit again. And I live out in the suburbs. I pay a ton in property tax for good schools. And now we're going to have to support the Chicago public schools because they haven't been able to manage themselves. It'd be great in this debate at some point if Karen Lewis wasn't the most prominent figure in the city of Chicago. We actually started having discussions about school teachers and children and how they're getting educated versus what we're talking about now with the union.
Yeah, and I also think that you lose the ability to say Rauner is involved in a war of words and throwing about a bunch of rhetoric if Karen Lewis is calling him a raving madman and talking about we're at war. So, you know, again, big surprise. Plenty of blame to go around. It's 7:31. We go to a big story. And then I promise we're going to get to the presidential race and off to New Hampshire because that's where the real fun is.
Oh,
those
yeah.
whack jobs that want to be president. There's a bunch of stuff this morning worthy of discussion.
Without a budget and with courts ordering to make payments without a budget, we are just blowing through all the limits. We're adding to that debt, and then we pay fees and late fees on all that debt.
This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio on Chicago's very own.
You are listening to station WGN.
Basically, Springfield is the 16-year-old in your house that insists he won't wreck the car and promises he won't have a party. Just ridiculous. Let's move on for a moment. Eric Edelstein and Pat Brady are with us, as is Rick Pearson. Sunday Spin. Oh, my fault. I lost Eric. Would you get him back for us? Sunday Spin this weekend again. The guests are?
I've got David Yepsen, former national political columnist for the Des Moines Register, now at the Paul Simon Institute. And I've got Matt Strawn, former Iowa Republican chairman.
Pat Brady, you were with us in Iowa. We've had a couple of days to digest and now move on to New Hampshire, where Andrea will be this weekend into next week, reporting live for us. What are you making of Donald Trump spouting off again? And has he got any sort of case in Iowa against Ted Cruz?
You know, as I mentioned the other day, I attended his concession speech. I got myself a big frosty beer, and I was sitting in the back waiting for him to blow up, and he didn't. But he did the next day. He's absolutely lost his mind, claiming that everything, you know, the votes were fraudulent and that there needed to be a recount. And the upside for people that care about the party, it looks like Trump has no ground game in New Hampshire, and the polls are consistently wrong. So maybe there's a chance that you know, somebody like Marco Rubio could actually win in New Hampshire.
And the Ted Cruz argument, Rick Pearson, that he's making is?
Well, one of the things, there's a number of things. One was allegedly Cruz supporters in the caucuses were telling Carson supporters that Ben Carson was dropping out.
So vote for Ted.
There were also the mailers that were sent out by the Cruz campaign to voters that assigned that looked very official and said voting violation. And it listed names of people and their neighbors and as well as their voting record, which is public record. But it made it look like it was some kind of official declaration, and that received some scorn. But despite all this, if you were in these caucuses, and for example, you know, Ben Carson's not happy about what happened, but if you're in those caucuses, you ostensibly have a representative there that speaks to the caucus. And so if Cruz's people are saying, you know, well, he's dropping out or whatever, there would be a Cruz person in that caucus or a Carson person in that caucus to say,
no,
that's not true.
Didn't all that stuff you just laid out there, like maybe it's where we're from, but it didn't seem to offend any of our sensibilities when we were.
No, absolutely.
Yeah, just go another day. The Iowa Attorney General apparently has certified the election results, so Trump doesn't have a case anyway. Either way,
well, the Democratic Party. I don't know that it's a party function. It's not a state function. But certainly,
but the state has to certify the results.
No,
right?
They don't.
Oh, they don't.
No.
Why did the Attorney General put out a press release saying that they certified the results? Who cares though?
I don't know why the Attorney General would, because it's not the Iowa caucuses are a party function.
Trust the people of Iowa. Let me go to Eric Edelstein here. The town hall last night on CNN with Hillary and. And also the great Bernie Sanders, the great enigma that is Bernie Sanders. Did you get a chance to see it?
I did. I thought they both actually did pretty well. Those are good formats, I think, better than these debates, which are sort of just a bunch of stage pageantry and one-liners. I think you actually get some substance and some detail. I thought they both were really good. And, you know, I think, as we've talked about even before Iowa, he's a real candidacy, and he's raising real money from grassroots. The question becomes, as we move into these bigger states that have more diverse populations, how will he do? I don't think there's any question he'll do well in New Hampshire. He's basically a favorite son there. The question becomes when the circus moves to Nevada and South Carolina and then some of those Super Tuesday states, how does he hold up? And, you know, I think that's the million-dollar question.
The money that's coming in is surprising to me as it continues, because what we visibly saw in Iowa were tons of kids, really enthusiastic kids, and you had to feel good about the fact that kids were involved in the process again, even though they don't have a clue what they're talking about. But tons of kids were involved and a lot of excitement there. But those can't be the sum total of the Bernie donations that are coming in. So I'm wondering if the crowds look different in New Hampshire for Sanders.
Well, there's no question there's a large feeling, and I think we've seen it and talked about it with the Trump phenomenon and the Sanders phenomenon. You know, surprisingly, they are similar in some ways, in a kind of angst against the system, anger at institutions, displeasure with Washington. They just manifest in different ways. So there's an energy there, and I think it's demonstrated in some of that grassroots money. I don't think that's a new phenomenon in American politics. We certainly had that over time. The question is, how sustainable is it? I think the biggest concern for the Clinton campaign is that money prowess. I think that Sanders raised over $30 million in the fourth quarter. He raised $1 million supposedly just after he gave his speech in Iowa. So what that says to you is he's not going away anytime soon. The question is that a good thing? I mean, there's a strain of thought that Secretary Clinton does better when she's pushed and has competition. And so, you know, I don't know that a long Democratic nominating process is necessarily a bad thing. I don't think it's what the Clinton campaign hoped for or wanted. I still think she's the overwhelming favorite to be the nominee.
Eric Edelstein at Edel64, at ADEL64, Pat Brady at Pat_Brady, and Rick Pearson, Chicago Tribune, ChicagoTribune.com. What are you writing about today?
Well, we're going to take a recap at some of our polling that we've been doing this week, and moving forward with that, we also have the candidates for Cook County State's Attorney are at the Tribune editorial board for a debate there.
Well, that'll be a good time. Thank you, my friend.
Thank you.
Coming up, New Hampshire, former Governor of New Hampshire, John Sununu, former Bush 1 White House key player and a guy who's got a lot of opinions about his home state and is about to meet the love of his life, Andrea Darlis. When we come back, first it's traffic on 720 WGN. Keyman in Washington and Keyman in the Granite State. Former New Hampshire Governor John Sununu joins us. Good morning, Governor.
How are you, Steve?
It's been a long time. Nice to talk to you again.
It's good to be back on. Thank you for having me.
And say hello to Andrea Darlis, who will be in your state this weekend. You're going to love her.
Hi, Governor.
How are you, Andrea?
Nice to meet you. Thank you. I can't wait to meet you in person.
Governor, is this a time where you look forward to everyone getting the hell out, or you're glad they're there?
Yes.
All of the above.
This has been a circus like none other. Can you compare this to any other election?
No, and it's even more different than you might even realize. I have never seen an electorate as hard to read as this one, Steve. It is usually a volatile electorate here. In other words, our folks quite often don't make up their mind. A lot of our folks don't make up their mind until the last 2 weeks. I actually think we've got maybe 40-50%, it's my guess, going into this weekend with a lot of volatility in who they might vote for. I think a lot of folks here usually vote on substance. This is a pretty astute voting population, and they're usually very good at sorting out who's really in favor of what, and they vote on issues. But this year, I think there's a large component of style and bluster that has been part of the equation. And after Iowa, I think there's a third piece, and I think people are now beginning to think strategically. As I go out and about, supermarket, drugstore, coffee, I talk to people, and some folks are indicating they might be willing to vote for their second or third choice if it gives the country a good president, it gives the Republican Party a good nominee that can beat Hillary Clinton. And so post-Iowa, people are playing a little bit more voting chess, if you will, than they have in the past. And I think they're really going to wait until the last minute.
Governor, you've been a part of this a long time. It seems to me that there's even more excitement this time around. It just continues to evolve. Why do you think that is? More people are just involved with this process? Or is it this particular one?
Or are more people angry?
Yeah.
I think the country is scared to death. I think the country has seen 7 miserable years. And folks that really want this country to reestablish itself, if you will, as a leader internationally, and really get scared to death when they see we're approaching $20 trillion in debt. I think there's a sense that this is sort of a last chance. It may not be a last chance, but there's that kind of a sense in the game. And they want to be part of fixing it, and they're trying to figure out how to do it. And so there's a lot more, at least verbal participation. I'm hoping it turns out to be ballot participation.
When you look at your fellow governors that are in the race and the ones that are still viable, right. Christie and Kasich and Jeb Bush, any one of those are qualified on most levels to take the job and theoretically make the country better. Hopefully find a way to work with the other party and realize you're president of the United States. You're not president of one party or the other. Yet all of them struggling to get any attention at all. Why is it all about the show as opposed to actually hearing about people who could do the job?
Because it's been about the show. And unfortunately, the show and the media cooperating with the show, the mouth that roared, is just overwhelmed a lot of the rational aspects of politics. And you're right, the three governors, Bush, Christie, Kasich, and Rubio as a senator. Rubio was a Speaker of the House down in Florida. They know how to herd the cats of a legislature and how to get some things done. And frankly, I haven't endorsed anyone, but I've been pretty open about the fact that I can live with any one of those four as our nominee. In fact, I'd be thrilled if any one of those four becomes the Republican nominee, because I think they will beat Hillary Clinton. And that's what people should be looking at. The Cruz-Trump pairing that seems to be very popular because they're loud and angry, I think have absolutely no idea how to make the system function and have no idea what they're getting into. How can you take Ted Cruz? How can you serve in the Senate and be hated by every one of your Republican colleagues and think that you know how to make anything function? And Trump is got a long history of his bankruptcies. And not only the four hotel bankruptcies everybody knows, but Trump Airline went bankrupt.
Sure.
Trump Mortgage went bankrupt. Three Trump books went bankrupt. Trump Vodka is out of business.
It's all show.
The whole thing. This is a guy whose life has been a series of failures. Yeah, he might make a little bit of money here and there, but I don't want a guy who's statistically a crapshooter on every decision. And a guy that doesn't understand the nuclear triad is such a key part of our defense. You can't have anyone. And now he's delusional. He's down in Arkansas saying that he really won Iowa. You can't have somebody like that in the White House, and it's time people understood that.
And the majority of the statements that come out of Donald Trump's mouth are about Donald Trump. They're not about the people he claims to want to represent. So the people of New Hampshire's BS meter.
He cannot go 20 words without saying I.
Exactly.
Really.
There's
an exercise for people that listen to him.
Yeah.
See if you can count 20 words without him saying I.
No, it won't happen. As a matter of fact, several narcissists called and go, good God, Donald, give it a rest. The BS meter of the people of New Hampshire is pretty good. Do you have confidence that they will see through that in the vote next Tuesday?
You know, I usually have extreme confidence. I am a little bit nervous about, as you pointed out, the character of this race is so different and so strange. I cannot connect what I run into as I talk to people out in the towns and cities and what the polls are saying. And when I see such a big disconnect between what I'm running into and what the polls are saying, I'm saying, what am I missing? And that's what I'm afraid of, Steve. I don't know what I'm missing right now.
Yeah, it's bizarre.
and it really is. And you know, you get on the phone with some of your old colleagues, old governors, old senators from up here who know the state pretty well, and the first thing we all say is, we don't know what's going on this time.
It's just it's beyond bizarre. And you got to laugh or you'd cry because it's so upside down and so ridiculous.
And, you know, it's usually embarrassing to go on radio and say, I don't know what's going on. But I'm trying to convey to people how strange this race is and how important it is to get back to looking at substance. You pointed out there are three governors running and a senator running that have been involved in making legislation for a long, long time. And you know, I know people may be shocked to hear this, but if you look at just records, the most conservative guy in the race is Jeb Bush.
Yeah, it's a true story.
And yet he's being tarred and feathered as a liberal. I'm not endorsing anyone, but I'm just saying in terms of perception, this is the strangest race in the world.
And honestly, because Trump is a human bug light and has created the ratings it has created, the national news networks are tripping over each other to do the next exclusive sit down with a hairpiece, and that's made the problem exponentially worse. All right, so when our friend Andrea gets there to be live and cover the primary for us, what's the first place she ought to go see? Give her your recommendation.
Where is she setting up?
I'm going to be in the downtown area.
Yeah, you should be in the Capitol.
Manchester?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
Yep.
Look, just set up and they'll come to you.
I'll say Sununu sent me.
Well, I know she looks forward to meeting you, and I'm really glad that you took the time to talk to us. Hold on 1 second. That's Governor John Sununu.
See you out there, Governor.
Former White House Chief of Staff as well, and for Bush 1, and a funny guy.
I was taking notes. My favorite Sununu quote today, he can't go 20 words without saying I.
Yeah. Yeah. I just wish he had an opinion. He is he's 5'4" or 5 or 6 inches of funny, really.
We'll try and get him on the program on Monday or Tuesday.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah.
8 o'clock. We'll come back. Do the news next on 720 WGN. Reunited and it feels so good. Yeah, Dean's back.
Reunited as we understood.
It's peaches and herb.
Yeah, very good. And sugar, this, one is in. This is our song. You, me, and Dean. Dean Richards, sponsored by the Captain James A. Lovell Federal Health Care Center. Back from his extended stay in Los Angeles.
Yeah, I was once reunited, but now it feels so good.
Where were you in L.A.?
I was in the Beverly Hills area doing some interviews there.
Well, you said it was part pleasure, part work.
It was. It was in the Los Angeles area. I interviewed Rebel Wilson for that romantic comedy that's out next week, How to Be Single, and the cast of that movie. But also George Clooney, Channing Tatum, Josh Brolin, among others from this new Coen Brothers movie, Hail Caesar, which is pretty funny if you're a Coen Brothers fan, if you're a movie file, cinephile. I think you're really going to like it.
You know, every time I see Josh Brolin, he gets funnier. He's a funny guy.
He gave us the most hilarious, funny interview. He smacked me in the face.
Oh, like he hits Clooney. Well, he told a story last night on Conan. He said, listen, for every woman that never got George Clooney, and for every man that wanted to punch him in the face because he's so good looking,
yep.
I went to the Coen brothers. I said, look, I want to slap him. And that's the scene we see in the trailer, right?
That's one of the scenes that they're showing because it's getting so much attention. So, you know, I sit down with them. We're going to play the whole interview on the Sunday show this coming weekend. But I sit down with them and I talk about how gratifying it was. He goes, that's one scene in the movie. That's all anybody is talking about, this movie where I, you know, slap the crap out of George Clooney. But, yeah, but... You know, you get to slap around Mr. Number One A-lister in the universe.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
It has to be kind of gratifying.
That's fun. It's fun.
Then I told him it would be an honor for me if he would slap the crap out of me a little bit.
And he smacked you.
As well. He had no hesitation about that.
Just leaned over and hit you.
I was expecting him. It's like, no, I couldn't. Yeah, when we slap you, sure, bam.
Well, yeah, welcome to hell, to Hollywood.
That may be my new thing now with the stars. Because, you know, they hate the press. They hate doing all these interviews. So if I just go in and go, give me your best shot.
I think it probably is going to go better than the last time you were with Angelina Jolie and said, you know, a lot of the stars sleep with me, and I don't want you to be the last one on your list.
That's true. Did not go well. That's true.
Dean, sponsored by the Captain James A. Lovell Federal Healthcare Center. Clooney and Channing Tatum sat down with you?
Yeah, sat down with the both of them. And as a matter of fact, we talked about, there's a couple of things you're going to remember most from this movie. One, seeing George Clooney get smacked by James Brolin. I mean, he gets smacked around pretty good by Brolin. But also, there's a 7-minute dance sequence, a la Fred Astaire, a la Gene Kelly, that Channing Tatum does. A song and dance number. Not trick photography, not stand-in dancers. This scene, you see a little bit of it in the trailer, but one of the real highlights of this movie is this song and dance number. So when I sat down with the boys, Channing talked about his dance scene, but started off with Clooney talking about getting smacked around a little. So if I didn't admire both of you enough, singing and dancing, wow,
yeah,
unbelievable, and you getting slapped around by Brolin.
See, now,
and two
see,
things.
You notice the difference? You speak about him as singing, dancing talent. You got the
slapped out. Well, kicked man. Out of you, number one. But what kind of chafing you must have endured in that costume?
You know, leather can be very chafing. It can be, and I would go home, I'd have to, there's a salve for it. A saddle salve.
Yeah.
Saddle soap.
This is where your true professionals come in.
That's true.
This is where your real professionals come in. The singing and dancing thing that you did now.
Hello, Bart. Yeah, no, look, I didn't know that I was actually going to be doing it. So I can't say that I was like...
Just walk on the set one day?
What do you think they hired you?
We added a page.
I knew I was going to be doing some dancing. I just had no idea it was going to be like a full 6 to 7 minute whole thing. Like, it just kept getting bigger. And then they were like, well, can you tap dance? And I'm like, no. And they're like, well, let's try it. And I'm like, okay. And then can you sing? Nope.
Is that you want to try it? The whole sequence? Is that you? Wow.
Thankfully.
Really impressive. Yeah, really, really, really impressive.
And it's not a review, but you say it's good.
I enjoyed it.
Okay, good.
I enjoyed it. I like the quirky Coen Brothers movie. It's just, definitely not for everyone, but it's an homage to Hollywood. It's an homage to filmmaking. Lots of inside, little things for, cinephiles. Steve, this is not a review. May I please emphasize?
Yes, no, of course it's not. You and I aren't old enough to appreciate Bob and Ray when they were at the peak of their powers, but Letterman brought them back in the early days of the Late Show in the early 80s, the mid-80s. And, of course, Chris Elliott is Bob Elliott's son. Bob Elliott died yesterday.
Yeah. Also, Abby Elliott, you may remember, 4 seasons.
From Saturday Night Live.
On SNL, that was his daughter. These guys started off on local radio stations, most prominently in Boston. From there, this was late 40s, early 50s. Television was just catching on, so network radio was was the rage. And these guys made the move over to network radio with this soft-spoken, two-man, very low-key, very satiric comedy style. Bob Elliott and Ray Goulding, they were hilarious. I used to enjoy them. I used to see them. Our age, we didn't get to see them in their peak, but we saw them on Ed Sullivan. We saw them on Johnny Carson. Letterman was obviously a big fan. This morning, people like Judd Apatow are remembering Bob Elliott, saying he was my David Bowie. People like Jimmy Kimmel tweeting out respect. Harry Shearer, he was the comedian's comedian.
Yeah,
people
very funny guy.
Remembering his extremely low-key but yet powerful style of comedy. And he was 92 years old, lived...
had a good run.
Nice, long, healthy run.
Glad you're back, buddy.
Good to be back.
And,
good to be back.
We will
not exactly, like talking to George Clooney, but...
Wow. Well, I mean, I told him I was glad to have him back, and now suddenly I'm not George Clooney.
No, he meant that, because he just...
Oh, I know what he meant.
Similar.
Oh, I know what he meant.
It's so similar because he just talked with Clooney.
Oh,
now
I'm
he's
pretty clear on
you.
What he meant. Yeah,
that's
yeah.
That's exactly what I meant.
people confuse you, too. That's all he meant.
Get off the show. It's 8:27. We're coming back with the big story next on 720 WGN. It's the coach, Joel Quenneville. Morning, Q. How are you?
Morning, great. How are you doing?
I'm doing good, and I know you were pleased the other night because Corey Crawford continued. And by the way, everybody, just forget about that end of the last homestand where the Hawks played 75 games in three nights or whatever that stretch was. Crawford has been unbelievable all year, but I thought that third period barrage that he took was as good as he's been all season, if not in years.
Yeah, had a couple of really big scrambles around in that, several big saves in that sequence and a big save in the last minute of the game. So he continues to do everything you want in the goalie and continues to improve his game as well. But I like how he wants the net, and it looks like he takes charge in the game, and whether it's handling the puck, rebound control, assertiveness, top of the crease, challenging. He just seems like he's really in tune and finding that puck.
How do you balance it as the head coach? Because you got a great goalie coach, and goalies are a special breed of crazy anyway. So how do you know when to talk to your goalie and when to leave him alone?
Good question. Usually, Jimmy does all the communicating with Crow or with Darrell's, and as the coach, you have your quarterly or your semi-annual meetings with each player, and get a little bit more personal in depth with the guy. But technically, I leave that to Jimmy. And the relationship and the rapport is, they visit after every game, before every game, and they review and they look forward to the upcoming shooters. And so I stay away. I know, like you said, they're temperamental in certain ways, and, they got their own union and for the right reasons. And so we know how to manage that, and the best way is basically let them do their thing and work well with their goalie coach. And I commend Jimmy and the job he's done, as well as his goaltenders.
There's no doubt about it. And like I said, I think Crawford is not even at his peak yet, and he's just playing unbelievably. Are all goalies more superstitious than defenders or guys up front?
I don't know if the word superstitious is the word. I think they're different in a lot of ways, their makeup, their focus. So you just kind of, let them go, and they get in their zone and, just stay away from it and respect it. But every goalie's different. I have a lot of goalies that are like hockey players, but not too many are like that. They're a different breed, but doesn't make them any different as far as being special in what we need. Because the importance of that position is probably, it's like a quarterback in football. It's obviously the most important position in our game. And, a lot of times everybody focuses on the difference between winning and losing and goaltending. One save, one bad goal is a difference. So there is a lot of scrutiny in the business, and there's a lot more pressure on the job. So we understand the whole mindset, and I think that's part of the reasoning.
I was talking to Tony Esposito this week about some of the best goalies in history, and you played against and alongside and been around the game forever of some of the greatest guys to ever be in net. But because they're a special breed, who is, I'm going to put this politely, who's the quirkiest goalie you ever played with or against?
Boy, that's a great question. I'm going to talk about the goalies. I played with Mike Palmateer. He was a beauty in Toronto when I first was a rookie. I played, I coached Patrick Roy. He's, Patrick had his methods and his way of going about him. Mike Liut had his ways. And they're all quirky in their own way. Greg Millen, I played with them for and coached a lot of goalies, and some of the best ever. They're all unique, and their quirkiness is, it's just the way they find a way to focus. And, sometimes you don't even exist being around them, but it's such a unique position, and the way they focus, give them that space. The quirkiest of them all. Oh, geez, got to be it. Patrick was a little different, but he was. You see him wired up on the bench there when he's coaching against you. And then as a goalie, his intensity was, it's a different level.
I would think Patrick Waugh would have been like, and you got to be old enough to appreciate the reference, I suppose, because this is even before my time and your time. But Bob Gibson is the guy that in baseball where everybody said you never wanted to go out and tell Gibby to give me the ball. It just seems like Patrick Waugh would be a guy that, on bad nights, he doesn't want to hear from you. And on good nights, he probably doesn't want to hear from you either.
Well, he was, Patrick, out of all the players I've ever coached, I always put him at the top of the list as far as the most intelligent player he ever I've ever been around. And, you know, Patrick was very demanding from his teammates or his, the positioning of his defensemen or how we played certain situations.
Sure.
And so he would reinforce a lot of times your team game. But if you didn't like something, you know, everybody, you could sense it, feel it. You would get, it would be addressed. And but it was a as a coach, don't mind that because we like accountability and we like getting things done the right way, and eventually you'll get it.
I know we're beyond it now, but it was getting the 2-1 win was great, and the guys were rested and ready and maybe even a little more amped up because the captain wasn't on the ice. In my opinion, and I don't know where you are on this, but it just seems the NHL's got to change the rule for the All-Star game, that if you're medically excused to be there, you can't suspend a guy. It just seems goofy.
Yeah, well, it's tough to argue when I remember with the Datsyuk or the Lidstrom or Ovechkin in the past, or situations that these guys, it'd be impossible now to go back on a standard that was in place. It'd take something to override that, something across the board at the rules committee. You know, I think everybody was happy with the All-Star game. I thought that was a good day, and I think we knew going into it, Johnny, you might have to miss a game, but we knew that Johnny needed time away. He needed to get better, and he's definitely progressed in a good way, and I'm sure he's chomping at the bit to get going here tonight.
Coyotes, what do fans need to look for that are watching the game?
Well, they're a dangerous team. You know, they're coming off a disappointing loss at home, and they'll be excited about playing us. I love coming here because we get a lot of Blackhawk fans, just like we did the other day in Colorado. So it's fun when you see half the building, at least sometimes even more, in your favor. We're fortunate in a lot of ways. The way the fans passionately follow our team or come to see us play, it's a boost. But we expect a competitive game. They're going to check well, and I think last time we were here, we got a great start, and we had to hold them off at the end. So, like the start, and let's play the same way throughout the game.
Senator John McCain is a semi-regular guest on the show here, and obviously senator from Arizona, and he goes, I love that logo. That logo for the Hawks is tremendous, but I'm so sick of being in Arizona and looking around, and half the building I'm looking at the Indian head. So he gets it, and you got just a great fan base there.
Yeah, he dropped the puck the other day. We're in town. I wonder if he'll be doing it tonight.
He may. Hey, one thing before we move on. The one-goal campaign, which has been so great for the Hawks, is tremendous. But if you go to the Chicago Blackhawks website now and ChicagoBlackhawks.com, there's the What's Your Goal piece of the action where you submit a video and you talk about your goal. And there have been millions of page views and literally thousands of videos have been sent in. And there's a new one that's there now with several of the guys, and they're all touching and they're all really cool. But you got to be proud of your guys. These are all 2016 superstar athletes, and it just seems that when the business side and the community side steps up and asks them to do something, they're always willing to go do it. I mean, I think it's tremendous.
It's a great organization, and it's another way for our players and our organization to reach out and touch some of our special fans that we have. And we have fans like no other team in the league, so we're fortunate in a lot of ways, and the relationship is tremendous, and it's another avenue, and the organization does a good job of connecting it as well.
It's What's Your Goal. You can check it out at ChicagoBlackhawks.com. All right, Coach, you got the Avs, and then you got Dallas in a little home-and-home over the next couple of weeks. Everybody wants to look ahead to the Stars. I know you're only playing them one game at a time, but I look forward to talking to you about taking those boys down as well.
All right. Sounds good.
All right. Have fun out there.
You betcha.
Eighth of a mile to go. American Pharoah's got a two-length lead. Frosted is all out at the 16th pole. And here it is. The 37-year wait is over. American Pharoah is finally the one. American Pharoah has won the triple crown.
How about that? Seems like 10 minutes ago, doesn't it?
It does.
I hope it's not another. How many years was it in between? 37?
Yeah.
I hope it doesn't take that long again. The man has won 4 Kentucky Derbies, 6 Preakness Stakes, 2 Belmont Stakes, and whenever you flip a coin with him, he wins that as well. He's Bob Baffert. All he does is win, and he's at the Super Bowl. Good morning, Mr. Baffert.
Hey, good morning, and thanks for having me. I was
I can't believe you had Coach Q on there.
Yeah, what an idiot. I didn't even ask him, but I just talked to him off the air a second ago, and this is the Coach Q quote, and I'm going to say it in his voice. Great trainer coming off a Triple Crown victory. I'm sure he gets excited pointing to the Derby. He's still our trainer. Ask him about Midnight Hawk. How's he doing? And give him my best.
See, that's him. You've got him down. You've got him down great.
Well, how is Midnight Hawk doing? And explain who Midnight Hawk is.
Well, Midnight Hawk, he's a 4-year-old, and he's doing well. He's coming off. He's actually a 5-year-old now. We tried to make a Derby run with him 1 year, but it didn't pan out. It was just a little bit too far for him. But he's getting ready to go to Oaklawn Park and run in the 12th up there. So maybe he'll do something. He likes that track.
He's one of Q's horses, though, right? Isn't it Midnight Hawk? Isn't that one of Q's? Yeah.
Yeah, that's one of his horses. He's a big, beautiful gray horse. And we actually, Mike Pegram, his friend, named a horse after him. We have a horse called Coach Q that we were hoping it might be a Derby horse.
Cool. Very cool.
But so far, he's been a little bit, we might have to castrate him. So,
Coach Q?
Coach Q. So when next time he runs, the announcer is going to mention, by the way, Coach Q has been gelded since his last race. So,
Let me tell you something. If you get that tape, I'll pay $1,000 to your favorite charity.
That tape would be worth something.
That is tremendous. You know, it used to be baseball players. Baseball players, old school baseball players lived at the track. I have a sense the hockey guys are probably more prevalent now than the baseball guys. Is that true?
You know what? Hockey players, I think they're probably more, they're not only great athletes, but they're very down to earth. You know,
oh, yeah, yeah.
They're very, you know, they love the sports. I think a lot of people, we follow sports now, you know, there's so much of it. And I was never really a big hockey follower until I met the coach, and then I followed the team, and he introduced us to all these hockey players. And 1 year we were at the Derby with the really good player that Sid Crosby.
Sidney Crosby, yeah, sure. Sid the Kid.
Yeah, what a nice guy. He was just a few years ago, and what a nice guy. And he was just, you know, so down to earth. And, you know, sometimes you see these great athletes, and you see them, and you can't—they're like can't get near them, you know. But it's really fun, and to be here at the Super Bowl now, we're gonna be my wife and I, Jill, we flew up here just for the night, made a little date out of it. We're gonna go do some radio this morning, and,
nice.
Go back home, and you know, like last night we went to dinner. Who was there with Archie Manning and Joe Montana having dinner together, so it was pretty.
How about that? Wow. How about that table? Dave Ennett, say hi to Bob.
Good morning. Bob, are you a regular at the Super Bowl? Is it first time, or do you try to get there every year?
No, I've been there a few times. Matter of fact, I was telling Joe Montana last night that the first Super Bowl I ever went to, Mike Pegram, my number one owner, he took me to the Bengals down in Florida, Bengals 49ers, when they 49ers won.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember, and I was telling Joe, we were in the corner, and all of a sudden time was ticking down, and they were behind, and we were 49er fans. And all of a sudden, everybody turned to the left, and we're whispering, we're saying, look at who's over there. It was John Candy, had just walked on the field. And I've heard him tell that story, and this John Candy, he says, look how he looked big. I mean, just this big guy came out.
Yeah, a lot of dude there.
And so I said, I remember that. And then all of a sudden you scored a touchdown, because I heard a documentary where he was in the huddle before he called a play and says, is that John Candy out there?
Yeah, exactly. That's how cool Joe Montana was. Joe Montana, and I would think the great jockeys of the world, you've got to have that kind of cool in your head, because you're riding on a giant horse that could throw you and kill you. And you got to keep the horse focused. You got to pick the right line. You got to be able to bring him home. I mean, it's pretty. You know, we know what a great trainer you are. How good a jockey were you?
I don't think I could have picked out John Candy out of the grandstand. I would have been so nervous.
Well, listen, it's great catching up with you. We want you to be one of our Super Bowl celebrity pickers. So who do you have in the game, and give me a score?
That's sort of, you know what, it's sort of my wife is from Tennessee, and she's all in on Peyton Manning.
I'll bet.
You know, all Peyton Manning, and, you know, I've always, the Manning's been there. And my little son, Bodie, who just turned 11, he is Cam Newton. He's all in on Cam Newton. So we've got a Manning shirt and a Cam shirt, so I'm sort of in the middle there. So I'm like, to me, I just like really just watching the game. It's you know, I would like to see Payne go out, you know, if he can, and or else watch the developing of a super quarterback, as in Cam Newton. So,
it's a no lose situation. Yeah. It's a no lose situation for football fans. You either see the legend get his second, or you see the new kid maybe get the first of many, and our old friend Ron Rivera get a Super Bowl win. So we can't lose, and it's hard for us to say that in Chicago when it comes to football. It's been a while.
Yeah, it's been a while for you guys, but you still have football up there?
Hey, we're coming back. All right, but give me a score. I've sensed you're taking Manning and the Broncos. Give me a score.
When it comes to scores, I am the worst. You know, I think it's going to be. I really think the Panthers are going to win. Yeah, if I was a betting man, mm-hmm. I would bet the Panthers. But I'd like to see Manning go out.
It's very funny to hear a guy who lives at the track go, if I was a betting man. Bob Baffert, you're good.
The casual bettors. There's casual bettors that just want to put a few bucks on there and
sure.
Rooting interest.
I gotcha. Please say hello to your wife and your son and the rest of your family as well, and all the extended folks there. Thanks for providing such great entertainment. Good luck with your 2016 run, and we'll make sure Q knows you said hi as well.
Well, I know. I'm all in on the Blackhawks.
Good man. Bob Baffert doesn't miss a trick. You see why he's a winner? Because he knows who the winners are.
That's right.
Back with your news next on 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio on Chicago's very own
720 WGN.
912. It's interesting when you juxtapose the state of Indiana's government versus the state of Illinois. And one of the absolute architects, if not the architect, whether he takes credit for it or not, is Eric Holcomb of Mitch Daniels' very successful run before he decided not to run for the presidency and went off to run Purdue. Eric Holcomb would now like to be the next senator from the state of Indiana and joins us now on the phone. Nice to have you on the show. I know we've been trying to find a date that works. I'm glad this call worked out.
Yeah, thanks, Steve. Good morning to you and all the listeners.
And as you know, WGN blasts all the way through Indiana, so you're talking to a lot of Hoosiers this morning, and I'm sure they're glad to hear from you as well. So let me first say thanks for your service. How many years in the Navy?
6 years, just over 6 years. Yep, right before Desert Storm is when I signed up. Came home and informed my parents that I had joined the Navy. Not that I was thinking about it, that it was a done deal, and I had a date to ship out. And actually went up and did push-ups in the snow for a couple months at Great Lakes.
Yeah, not far from here, obviously. Well, you know, again, we thank you for your service, and we appreciate that commitment. You know, I look at Indiana, and you'll understand this, Eric, because you've lived in government business for a long time. We're in such a mess in Illinois. We're in such a mess in Chicago. And I love this city and I love this state. But it seems like you guys are doing a lot of things better there. And if you're going to run for the Senate, I guess I'd ask you to identify a few things that need to be fixed in Indiana. Because from my view, things are going pretty well.
Well, they are. We're a state that literally works. We've gone from a flyover state, you know, a little over a decade ago, to now a global jobs magnet. And it's not rocket science. It's not complicated. It's just some fundamental approaches and practices that you have to be disciplined to follow through on. And that's, you know, not spending money you don't have and living within your means and creating an environment where people feel good about their investments. And that all has the ramifications of that is all good. And it means a better quality of life. And when you see our different regions, including the Northwest region, that is a real engine to our state economy. When you start to see that cooperation occur and people understand that as a state, we're all in this together, we're all going in the same direction, we start to, you know, click on all cylinders and it's full throttle, wide open. Here we go. Get on. And that train's, you know, if it's going in the wrong direction, it's hard to turn around.
But if it's going in the right direction, it's full steam ahead, and that's kind of the path that we're on. But we've remained true to those principles of limited government. When Mitch Daniels, you referred to him, when we came in and left, it was night and day. And so our state government employee levels was down to the 1972 level when Mitch Daniels left office. So we limited our government. People didn't miss that. We improved the services at the very same time, proving more government does not equate to better government. In fact, it typically leads to worse government, bigger bureaucracy. So we right-sized our government force, and then we encouraged private sector solutions to a lot of the problems that were ailing us in the beginning, in those beginning years. And it just over time paid off. It wasn't all easy. It wasn't all popular, or the medicine didn't taste good going down, but it sure made us better. And that's why we are kind of this lighthouse or this beacon in the Midwest, where people say, we want to go there and we want to do business.
Eric Holcomb at Holcomb for Indiana. Is the website that you guys want to send people to. Is that right?
That's correct.
All right. So
Indiana.com.
So when you go to Washington, you meet people around Indiana, and they say, look, Eric, I know y'all like you, and I'm going to let you shoot hoops here in a second. But before we do that, if I send you to Washington with my vote, how are you going to get along with folks and get stuff done? Because, as you know, one of the biggest problems in D.C. is that everybody's more in it to be right. They're not there to do the right thing.
Yeah. Well, and that's certainly, you know, I've been on, as you may know, Steve, I've been on the road since the end of March in kind of perpetual motion. And last year went to all 92 counties, put 25,000 miles on the car last year. The Earth's circumference is 24,901 miles. So I literally drove around the world.
That's a lot of Indiana.
That's a lot of Indiana and a lot of tenderloins, and I loved every day of it. Very encouraging. But I'll tell you that, folks, I've watched the electorate's mood, so to speak, go from worry to concern to anger to flat out now people are scared about the future of our country. And elections have consequences at the local level, at the state level, and certainly at the federal level. And while we have our house in order here in the state of Indiana, Washington, D.C. is just the opposite. And, you know, I can cite all the examples about our kind of national security concerns, our economic security concerns, our personal liberties and freedoms that are being infringed upon every day, intruded on.
But if you come in as a freshman senator, you're going to be a guy that's going to have to go literally door to door in the Senate building and go, look, I'm here to get along and I'm here to get something done. And we're not always going to agree, but let's figure out a way to talk. Is that your method?
That is the method. And that is what has proven to work here. I mean, part of the reason why I'm traveling all around the state, not just shooting hoops and making them, by the way, but part of the reason is because I want to best reflect and represent Indiana. And the way you do that is by showing up in person. That stuff money can't buy. Those are forged relationships that are deep and long. And so understanding the folks that are moving their communities and the issues that they face is of paramount importance here and in Washington, D.C., where you're representing that those interests, those local interest. And secondly, what has to occur out there and what occurred here in Indiana going back to 2005 is we said, here is our plan. If you elect me, this is what I will go fight for every single minute of every single day. And that's what got us back on track. If we had no plan, if we were just playing defense, if we were just kicking the can down the road, the can here in the state of Indiana would look like our national can. It's getting too big to kick. It's going to break our foot.
Yeah, and you don't
break our bank accounts.
And that's going to hurt your hoops situation. If you go to Holcomb for Indiana, by the way, you'll see pictures of Eric Holcomb shooting hoops in all of the stops in all of the counties. Before I let you go, your opponent is Congressman Todd Young, and this is a tough choice for the people of Indiana because he's a popular guy as well. What's one distinct difference between the two of you?
Well, I'd say I have actually two opponents, two congressmen.
Congressman Todd Young and Congressman Marlon Stutzman, both are friends. So that makes it better. But what's different is our kind of life experience and our life story. I served in the Navy, and I've spent my entire adult life post-Navy service here in the state of Indiana, turning this state around with real results to point to, helping take a state from $800 million in debt to a $2 billion surplus, helping take a state that needed to address our roads and bridges and found a way creatively to pay for them, not on the taxpayers' backs. We actually paid for all the record-building decade of road and bridge building with private sector dollars. I was part of all that. So I have kind of real results, and I've not been in Washington, D.C., which turns out, you know, they used to say the power of incumbency was a huge advantage. And in the day that I live in today and the doors that I'm knocking on every single day, that's not an advantage anymore. So
no, incumbency is kind of like dirty underwear. Now, if you've been there and done that, people go, well, next. So that's
That's the bottom line, is people say, look, the next 6 years, a United States Senate term, the next 6 years can't look like the last 6 years. So just like in 2005, if you want to change the results, sometimes you got to change the lineup. And I've got real experience that led to real results, that led to a real improvement of quality of life. And that's what I go. I go out and I don't run down anybody else, my opponents included. I talk about my experience and what that can lead to in Washington, D.C., and I'm encouraged by the support that we're getting every single day. I mean, we've got up in the region, you know, we've got the mayor of Valparaiso, the mayor of Portage, the mayor of LaPorte,
sure.
All supporting me.
Right in our backyard. Meanwhile, all those people are looking at Springfield in Indiana, and they're just giggling. They're just looking at Springfield, giggling, going, what are you people doing? One last thing before I let you fly. And again, it's holcombforindiana.com. And I'm sure we'll talk again. And good luck with the run here. But, you know, in helping build Mitch Daniels and being the architect, my word, not yours, of his very successful run and his governorship, I was really disappointed in 2012 when he decided not to run. He's entitled to have his life, and I'm sure he enjoyed going off to run Purdue. But do you think there's any chance that he may, you know, jump back in? He hasn't closed the door completely on a national run at some point, has he?
Well, I mean, I think he is enjoying life right now. He's the, you know, I wanted him also to be the president of the United States of America, not the president of Purdue, but Purdue was the winner in that deal.
Mm-hmm.
He would have served this country well, and he would have taken exactly what I want to do. He would have taken the same approaches that he led the effort to turn this state around, had a lot of people helping. We the people all coalesced and came, rallied around this platform that he promoted and led. He would have done that for the country. But, you know, he just signed an extension at Purdue University, which is just a, you know, state-of-the-art, world-class university here, and he's really enjoying his time there. So you never know. Never say never, I guess, but right now I know he's doing a lot of good for a lot of students that are going through Purdue University's programs, and we're lucky. Hoosiers are lucky that Mitch Daniels stayed in Indiana.
Good luck to your opponents, and certainly good luck to you. I appreciate your time, and I look forward to talking to you again. And I like your jump shot. You got a good vertical here. You got good extension. I don't think I've got a shot.
Follow through.
Yeah, follow through's not bad. Always fingers at the basket. Hold on for us. Holcombforindiana.com. That's the website. And again, you know what they're doing? You know, I mean, I'm actually jealous. Do you ever think you'd be in Illinois, in Chicago, and be jealous of Indiana? Well, I'm jealous of Indiana.
Jealous of their finances, maybe.
Jealous of the way the state's run.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. Good for them. 924, back after this on 720 WGN.
720 WGN.
The Steve Cochran Show presents Hawk
Chicago
Opedia.
We may get a fracas here before it all ends.
A what?
Sponsored by Freshway, the official deodorizer, he said, of your Chicago Blackhawks. If you smell like Dave's Beaver Van, You need Freshway.
I don't think that's
Dave. You have a beaver van?
Well, how do you think he gets the beavers to, from place to place to cut down the wood?
No.
He's got a van full of beavers.
No, I think.
Dave, can I come in the beaver van with you?
Whatever, Ken.
All right, so here's Dave now with today's Hawkopedia. What's today's term?
Well, you've heard the story of Dennis Weidman, the Calgary Flames defenseman.
And no relation to John Weidman.
No, and I even spelled the same
yes.
way. Cross-checked the official last week, linesman Don Henderson. The NHL players...
No relation to Florence Henderson, the mother on the Brady Bunch.
No.
Okay. Oh, she's a very nice lady, by the way.
She is.
The NHL Players Association has filed an appeal on Weidman's behalf.
They have. Is that just an automatic thing?
Well, they maintain that he's got a clean record. He's not caused problems in the past. Mm-hmm. The league says Weidman was diagnosed with a concussion after the game, but that does not excuse his behavior.
Nope.
If the suspension is upheld, Weidman will forfeit $560,000 in salary.
That's a tough conversation when you get home. How was your day at work, honey? Well,
yeah,
we're going to lose $560,000.
We're going to cut back a little bit.
Yeah.
It's not the first instance of a player making physical contact with an official and being punished for it. Last one involved a former Blackhawk, Daniel Carcillo, then with the Rangers. He was suspended 10 games in 2014 for elbowing a linesman. That suspension was later reduced from 10 games to 6. And a popular former Blackhawk drew one of the longest suspensions for abuse of an official. Now, you probably know this guy. You probably met him, Steve. Tom Lysiak.
Tom Lysiak.
He's back every year for the convention.
Yeah. Sure.
He drew a 20-game suspension. This was in 1983 for tripping a linesman during a game against the Hartford Whalers, a team which included who?
Joel Quenneville.
Joel Quenneville at Chicago Stadium. The Players Association went to Cook County Circuit Court, got a temporary restraining order to allow Lysiak to continue to play. But ultimately, the suspension stood, and Lysiak was suspended for 20 games.
And to use the words of our friends, Eddie Olczyk. Well, he's our friend, Eddie Olczyk. Mm-hmm. There's only one of them. When you're talking to the kids playing hockey, stop it right there.
Yep.
And when I say stop it right there, I mean
don't
check the ref into the boards.
Right.
Yes.
And don't trip him. Don't elbow him. None of that.
That's what I'm talking
about. That's
our
Hawkopedia for today.
Nicely done by you.
Thank you.
Even with all the foolishness going on around you.
Not from me.
This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio on Chicago's very own 720
WGN Chicago.
That's former club DJ Bill Curtis. It's 9:42, and the Steve Cochran Show number 580 continues. We're almost to 600.
How about that? Time flies.
Remember when I first came back and I had revolving one-week contracts every Friday? I had to sign a new deal.
It was weird.
Yeah, they're 2 weeks now.
That's good.
Yeah,
getting better. Maybe you get up to 3 by 600 shows.
Thank you for making this the number one talk show in Chicago. We appreciate your support very much, and we will come and cut your lawn this summer. At Cochran Show on Twitter, Facebook.com/Steve Cochran Show. Dave Ennett's going to run up a bunch of towers at Presidential Towers. David, I used to live there.
At Presidential Towers or in the stairwell?
No, when I first moved to Chicago in 1994, I lived in an apartment at Presidential Towers for about 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
And I used the elevator.
Why would you do that?
Well, because it was available. Mm-hmm. You, however, are going to, again, for the second year in a row, climb all the stairs in all four towers. And why are you doing this?
I'm doing this as the American Lung Association Fight for Air Climb. And I did this last year, and WGN Radio is a partner, and we're putting together a team and have a lot of people participating.
This is Sunday, March 6th.
Mm-hmm.
What was your time last year?
38 minutes.
What were you doing? It took so long.
I was walking up 1,000. How many is it, Krista? It's 1,000.
Yes, introduce our guest, if you would, please.
Yes, from the American...
Kristen Young.
Yes, from the American Lung Association.
Hi,
executive
good morning.
Director, the big shot, the boss is here.
Oh, yeah.
That's right. The heavy is here. Executive Director, Kristen Young. All right, so what if people need to know? Because you're obviously still accepting people.
Oh, yeah. So the event's Sunday, March 6th. So the website will be open, fightforairclimb.org, for the next month leading up to about 2 days before. It's 2,340 steps. So no big deal, Dave. 38 minutes is pretty good.
Kristen, I do every other step. You know, it's
I was going to ask you that. Do you do every two or every three, and then when you go around, do you like swing along the railing?
Well, there is technique involved. They found that out last year.
No, that's a mistake, right, Dave?
Yes. You don't want to...
No, don't take two stairs at a time.
You don't do two at a time, but you do use the railing when you get to the landing to kind
like,
of...
To whisk yourself
for a little
around.
Bit of leverage.
Kind of that whip yourself help. Around?
Yeah.
Not that fast.
The whip.
Okay.
No, just sort of...
But you and Mary are both in great shape. Mary, what was your time?
I think it was like 35. Four.
Oh,
I'm
you
not
should beat
positive.
You.
So you beat Dave like a rented mule.
Well, no, Dave and I were really close.
Yeah,
we kept.
We finished right around the same time each.
4 minutes.
Tower.
Sound like
no,
close.
I don't think it was four. It might have been a two, but I don't know. I don't remember.
It wasn't really a competitive thing for
no,
me.
No, not at all.
Oh yeah,
Dave.
Right,
Mary.
And
let
it...
me just get around you.
No, I never, Mary. No, no, that's not fair. I'm competitive in a lot of things. I was not competitive. I just
that,
wanted
no.
to get through it last
Very
year.
Very hard.
It
to believe.
Is a lot harder than you think. I hate to say that, but it is.
Now, generally, when you run, you know, you hit a wall, and at mm-hmm. some point, and usually when you run, no matter how much you run, first couple of miles, you go, "Wow, was this a dumb idea?" But then you get into a groove, and your body starts to, you know, find that zone, and you feel good about things. Does that happen when you're climbing stairs, Kristen?
You know, I'll tell you, I think one of the things we push the most is that it really isn't a race. I mean, it can be if you want it to be, but it really is for every shape, size, and age. We had a 5-year-old climb last year, and we had an 81-year-old climb last year. So we just really encourage walking up the stairs. If you try and sprint, I'll tell you, 9 times out of 10, by the 10th floor, you are toast.
You're gassed.
So, yeah, you're gassed. So just to make sure that you kind of take your time. And we do have water stations every 10 floors going up. It's 45 floors, a tower, and you can pick to choose 1, 2, 3, or all 4 towers to climb. And I'll tell you, I know, Dave, you did 4 towers, right?
I did.
And I think about 80% of the people tend to do 4, because once you get in there, you are walking up, and just to clarify, you're taking the elevator down, so we don't make you go up and down in the same tower.
What's the line for the elevator like?
We keep it moving pretty quick. So you, I'd say on max, you're waiting about 5 minutes.
Yeah, it's awesome. Actually, it's a nice break because you have a little water and you just sort of catch your breath and then
commiserate with everyone else. And then it's okay, let's
yeah,
go.
Exactly. Yeah, that's it.
Was there any point where you wanted to quit?
Wanted to quit? No. But in the
at what point did you cry?
It was about.
Step three.
I'd say about 12 flights up in the first tower.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, I'm not sure I'm going to make it. I think I said to Mary after tower one, when I got to the top, I think I said, I don't think I'm going 4. I'm going to go 1 more. I mean, that's how I felt at the time.
No, you do, really. And then you just, with everyone encouraging you, everyone says, come on, you can do 1 more. Okay, I'll do 1 more. And then by the time you've done 2, you're like, okay,
this
going.
Isn't so. Now I'm into a groove.
Come on.
Kristen, what's the record?
So last year, the fastest for 4 towers was 15 minutes total. And the timing starts at the bottom up to the top. So this guy was flying. But he's also what we call an elite climber. So these are guys that are traveling across all the stair climbs in Chicago, throughout the country. This is really, he's made it his passion to do this. So it's not like he hopped in the stairwell for the first time.
So what you're saying is there's something wrong with him.
Yeah, basically. So. That's it.
Is that a male or female time?
It's a male. And the female was 18 minutes, so not too far behind.
Crazy good.
Yeah.
Really good.
That was Patty Vasquez.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
So who's on our team? We got you, Patty. Anybody else we want to mention?
Let's see. Mary?
Hmm? Well, I'm not sure yet because I'm just getting back from Florida. Okay. So I'm still debating whether I'll be like in
shape. You'll be great.
Yeah, I'm still.
You'll be great.
I'm still debating 2 days.
Come on, Andrea.
We actually have a lot of people. I
actually hired someone to climb for me. You're
I'll
forgetting,
be in Hampshire, Dave.
You're forgetting someone of significance that's on your team.
Kevin.
Thanks,
yeah,
Dave.
But that's
Thanks
a big
Dave.
Deal.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean, you got to remember.
I wasn't forgetting him. I was saving the best for last.
5 weeks ago, I found Kevin face down in a Portillo's drive-thru with a hot dog hangover. And now he's dropped 15 pounds. He's in the best shape he's been since he played football in high school.
Yeah. Dave, I'll race you.
No, I'm not racing,
Kevin. Yeah, we'll race. We'll turn it into competition.
Yeah.
No, it's not going to be a competition, but I'm glad you're doing it.
Race you in the elevator.
Okay, that's fair.
You were 34 minutes, is that what you said?
38.
Okay, I'll beat that.
Okay,
Kevin,
that's fine.
You don't want to race, trust me. Not a good idea.
Really I'm going
to
race.
Kevin, you got to race. You got to beat him.
We have some folks from
Crush him.
Sales staff. Maureen McDonald walked with me last year for a good part.
Maureen's
I
great.
Think she's
love
taking
Maureen.
Part mm-hmm. again. Yeah. I saw our head of sales, Jeff Hill, yesterday getting on the elevator to go downstairs because he was going to practice in the stairwells here. Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
And Dan Richmond from our sales staff, I think. Adam Hoag, I think, is going to do it from sports.
Great. I'm
trying to get Jared Payton to do it, but you know, he's busy. He'd kill it. I mean, he'd crush it.
Yeah, Jared's in phenomenal shape. Yeah. It's a great thing to do. It's a wonderful way to raise money, and it's a wonderful thing to do with a minimal $100 fundraising commitment. It makes it attainable for everybody.
Yeah, right. So the funds raised benefit the Lung Association, and we're doing everything to prevent and cure lung disease from lung cancer, COPD, asthma. It's a great opportunity to get in the stairwells. And truly, Dave can attest to this, when you get in the stairwells, you really do understand what it's like to fight for air, which is kind of the point, and we want to make sure we're getting the message out as much as we can. And we're thrilled to have partners like WGN Radio, TV, Chicago Tribune Group, United Healthcare is our presenting sponsor. And it's a fun day, even if you're only climbing one tower. We have an after party at South Branch a couple blocks away, so you can kind of make it a big team effort and kind of keep the party going. So
yeah, GNTV, I think, has a big team as well.
Yes.
And
Marcus Leshock is actually our kind of spokesperson for the event this year.
I saw that. And
if it's 180 floors, Dave, could I break it up over, say, 3 months?
Yes, of course you could. One of the things that's nice is as you go up the stairwell, people have put up pictures, signs of who they're climbing for.
Well, that's nice.
Their loved ones who might be battling COPD or something. So it kind of helps keep you going.
I actually, the person I hired to climb is going to be running with a chalupa belt just in front of Kevin to keep him going. Kind of his incentive. He'll have a chalupa on the back of him. So
like
that'll be good.
Like on a fishing pole.
Exactly. Exactly. All right. So Kristen Young, the executive director for the American Lung Association of Greater Chicago, give me whatever you want people to know to make sure that they sign up in time and be a part of the fun.
Yeah. So the website is fightforairclimb.org. You can come and climb as an individual. We'd love for you to get a team going. If you have any questions, you can call us directly at our office, 312-781-1100. But encourage you to come out. There's a registration fee of $25 and a minimum fundraising of $100. But we give you all the tips and tools to be able to fundraise that online with email, Facebook, whatever you can do. So we make it as easy as we can. And again, fightforairclimb.org.
Great. And here's what I'll do for you and Mary and for Kevin. I'll cover your first 100 for all three of you.
Thanks, Steve.
Whoa,
so
100 really?
For
Steve.
Nice. Very nice. Yeah.
Well, then maybe
can I also
I
borrow $100?
Well, that was $100 I was going to lend you.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah, because I want the Lung Association.
By the way, there's also snacks at the end. Kevin.
There are snacks.
What
yeah.
kind of snacks are we
there's
talking about?
Good snacks, right, Kristen? I mean, there's like bananas.
Lots of bananas.
Granola bars.
Nine bars, granola bars.
And you get a great shirt, too, Kev. A great shirt.
Yeah, and you're going to need to change. You're going to smell funky like a monkey.
Yeah.
And are we going to get Dave Ennett to win it shirts?
I hope so.
Yeah. All right. Well, congratulations. Kristen, great job. Where'd you come from before you were doing this?
I was at the American Diabetes Association, so I've been circling the rounds here.
You're committed to causes.
I am, yes.
Well, good for you.
Thanks so much. Thanks for having me.
And congratulations on your success.
Great.
The American Lung Association of Greater Chicago wants you to sweat like you've never sweat before for all the right reasons and feel what a fight for air really sounds like with the Fight for Air Climb at Presidential Towers. Again, it's coming up in a matter of just a few weeks now, and it's Sunday, March 6th. I've lost my date, March 6th. For information and registration and all of the above, the website's still the best place to go, right?
Yeah, and I will share that we do have a climb at Oakbrook Terrace Tower next weekend on Valentine's Day. So if anybody's interested in training for the big one, there's an opportunity.
How about that?
Oh, yeah.
It's like a whole circuit.
Yeah,
how many floors is that?
31 floors out at Oakbrook Terrace Tower, and it just kind of gets you going a little bit. You get a little into what you're going to be doing on event day. So,
see, I think I'm trying to think of what I can do
it's like
for
a driving
Valentine's
range,
Day this
it's like
year.
Like a driving range.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, just get out and hit a bucket.
Yeah, fantastic.
Yeah, thank you.
Bill and Wendy coming up, 720 WGN. At 9:57, before we take our final break and get Bill and Wendy in here, we don't have time to do this today, so we'll take it up tomorrow. But this is show number 580, and we've only got a few left because we're all going to die.
No, we're not going to die.
What?
Unless we run up the presidential towers in 8 minutes.
No, there's
whatever
a
that record was.
There's an asteroid that's going to fly within 11,000 miles of Earth. That's 95% closer to us than the moon.
Oh my God!
Yeah.
Oh, that's not good.
Yeah. So, you know, I don't know which show it's going to hit on, but I don't like our chances.
Do we know where it's going to hit?
Well, it's not going to actually hit the Earth, or at least they say it's not. But it'll be sometime in September of 2017. So we've got a year and a half.
Yeah.
And the last year and a half of this show is going to be really great till we all die in the great asteroid destruction of 2017.
Hopefully it'll just breeze by us.
I don't like our chances. 11,000 miles in space speed? That's like nothing. That's nothing. You know what that is? That's here to that lady that just walked by the window.
Oh, we got to live it up.
So if you're wandering, let's say you're wandering in the part of the Earth where the asteroid's clipping along, and that asteroid, you know, all it takes is a little this and a little of that. What if you're too tall?
I don't have
to
worry
about that. NBA players are at the greatest risk of being killed by this asteroid because they're tall.
What about the buildings? I mean, wouldn't they be hit before the people?
But it depends on how tall the NBA player is. It's a lot of variables in this.
We're not going to get hit by that.
Again, it's September. Plan your schedule accordingly. September of 2017, we're all going to die from an asteroid implosion.
I don't think so.
We'll come back and say hi to Bill and Wendy on one of their final shows on 720 WGN. Kevin was just telling me something off the air and I wasn't listening. Kevin, say it on
the air. See, this is what happens when you say Bill and Wendy coming up with one of their final shows. We get texters to say, what? Bill and Wendy are doing their final show today?
No, not until September of 2017 when we're all killed by the asteroid.
Right, just want to clarify that.
Yeah. Wow, someone cared?
Yeah.
Awesome.
Relatives and stuff.
Yeah.
They love our 12%.
It was Bill's wife and your husband.
Yeah, because they have to get jobs then.
Right. No one's happy about this. Steve, sometimes stuff happens on the show, and I'm listening, and I think
like
to myself,
the impending asteroid death?
Well, that's one of them.
Yeah.
And I think maybe I'm just too drowsy, and I'm not hearing this right. Is Coach Quinville being castrated? Did I hear that right on your show?
Well, we're trying to raise enough money.
My gosh.
Yeah, we got a Kickstarter campaign going right now to castrate Coach Q. So.
A Kickstander campaign, did you say? Kickstarter?
Kickstarter, actually.
Won't be Kickstander anymore.
And castrate Coach Q will all be spelled with Qs. I don't know why. I just think the sign's going to look
more fun
better.
That way.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
So technically, it'd be a Quastrate, quotes Q. Yeah, that'd be what it is. Well, I didn't sleep a lot last
night.
That's
awful. I hope that doesn't happen.
Well, I hope so, too. But, you know, I got to do whatever I have to do for the show.
Sure. Of course.
Only a year and a half to go. Here's Bill and Wendy.